Hortense d'Amancluse, Reel 12.
Now, this is the part where you don't, where I still haven't really realised that you could experiment doing it. I thought they were just, unfortunately, that you caught some diseases. Now, on the continent, as a young girl, from very early stage, you are taught, this is in your brain, that what they call prostitutes, the bad girls, you learn to avoid certain streets. You're not so happy. This is the way of life. Right. In my mind, they were bad. They were bad girls. It had gone the wrong way. Then, in between when I was better, for not for very long, with terrific pain, my leg grew. That Oberhauser, which was matron, got me in a corridor. And this corridor was in the depth of the and there was one door and entrance, the same door as to go out. No back door. one, two, three, four, five doors in that corridor. First door was the stairs where there was a bathroom. Right? And then the other doors were all very infectious, which we learned later on when I became a little bit. But my bunk, she had arranged her bunk, and I was alone in this bunk. It was right put next to the windows. Yes, she remembers me because she was in that party that gave me the injection right from the beginning. And there was some other bunks in this corridor, quite fair and difficult. But the width of it mustn't have been all that wide, because by the time my bunk was there, the other bunk, it was only just a north room. Well, I should say like that. Left. So that must have been the width of.
Yes. A couple of feet.
Yes. Then those doors in between. Right. They always had to come past my bed because there was another door on the back of my bed which I couldn't see. But it was shearing and there was all these monsters. Very well uniformed and immaculately dressed. Still don't understand the game. What made these people who were educated, trained as surgeons, and, you know, come into, inhale the stench of that place, come and pick the jet? Oh, I don't understand it. How do you find a joy in coming in there? I used to hear this horrible scream behind me, you know, because I told you there were people that were in pain or something. Because when I first read, which was sent to me anonymously, in 54, when the late Lord Russell of Liverpool wrote the book Discourse of the Philosophy. And I received that book at child. I don't know where it came from. It must have come from him. Because he did ask me to testify. And I was still not very well. And I'd heard rumors that people that went and testified came back and they were ever so ill when he came back from this interrogation. Because he came away feeling that they were the guilty ones. It was very often said, you see, because these people were probably structuring up. You weren't all that way like I do now, normal. Explaining at these trials, it would be overwhelming when you stand in front of one that you know and you've seen commit these murders like that. Your reaction must be absolutely horrific. And then, of course, the defense used to make it out, right? But we do know that these people have suffered and all that, but you must excuse that because the bound, their mind is bound to be affected. And in the end, we come back and we thought, well, in other words, I've been in the cold, I've gone off my locker. And the word spread around. Of course, my mother and my father said, you are not going. And I said, then they came from Brussels, quite a few that knew that I was cold. And they said, Hortense, you must not. Because we haven't got enough proof. And the first thing they will say is, look, she's here. We haven't heard it yet. And I understood that, and I thought, well, I can't say anything because I don't know anything. I don't know if I can get you. They could have made mincemeat that, didn't they? Because I didn't know the I knew the scars and I knew what I was still suffering. But well, I could have said yes, well, and I talked to her and I gave her a biscuit, which was all true. It was all scary. And I talked to her and I saved it from this and I saved it from that. Well, I would have had to admit, yes, that was true. But on the other hand, I saw him turn around and go in that room, and then after he'd gone back out, they would bring the dead bodies. Which I didn't know what had happened, but apparently they used to go in there and give petrol injections. And they used to die with a great big scream, and that was the end. Female injection. And I used to think, every time they go in there, about 10 minutes after, they bring all these bodies out. I should have had to, I would have said that. But then, of course, I was talking to him. My father and mother said, because I was still under age, you see, the age of consent was 21 for a girl, 18 for a boy. So they could put their foot down and say, no, it's a venture too much, she's not there. So that was it. So I received his book. And it took me a long time to read it because my English was still not as good, you know, in reading it. But it was sent to me through Keele University. And wishing me good luck and all that, I still got all that to it. And eventually I read it, and of course I could connect quite. And to me, that was the first time I read something that was so true. And of course, he was the Assistant Attorney General at the Nuremberg Trials, you see. And it was without exaggeration. And I remember also remembering the words that you wrote in there. If ever the whole truth was told, it would not be believed. If it was all written, it would not be read. Later, at Russell and Liverpool. And I remember when he died, a brief moment on the news that he had died, but all day till we were sick of it, listening to that one that died in Ireland on the same day from he starved himself. Bobby Watt was his. So, yeah, and that's what I'm saying, you see. I also read in the news, the newsletter from the Special Forces once, a friend of mine that died in the Hansons in the war. And I was reading very interesting. And obviously, they must have known he was a very good, a brave man, but he didn't know all about him. And in there was a passage, and that stuck in my mind. And the end in his edition. It is sin to death. It is sin to die as your secrets are. And I read that over and over, and I thought, well, that's right, really. Because by then I had lost my father, I had lost my mother, I had lost my brother. And I felt if I had nobody left to, things that kept coming up, to go and ask, can you put me right in that? What was this or what was that? And I thought, well, yeah, they all died with that same time, so to say. Because nobody would listen. Nobody would listen to you. You people asked you something. Was it really as bad as it's made out? And that just puts you off. Because you straight away thought, oh my God, we don't believe you. And we could never make them understand. And I keep saying that. Yet you can read all the books, you can watch all the films, you can watch all the television, everything. You never come to the conclusion that you can't hear, you can't smell, you can't talk, you can't feel. And when you used to hit somebody to death in front of you, you felt it as well, you know? You felt the same cold, you felt the same pain. And we all looked equal when we stood naked. And I always remember that as well. At one time they used to say the different religions, but I'm Roman Catholic, my husband was Church of England. I insisted, and he was the same, that we were equal. We had the same right in his religion and I had in mine. And I had changed my mind from what I was brought up in, my priest used to say, as a young child. Anybody outside this religion are sinners. And I remember, the first time I stood on my pearl, at this particular day, when it was what you call selection day. Well, we all know now what selection day means. And it was so cold. And we all stood naked. And I thought, my God, who am I? Because we all looked so equal, we all looked the same, we felt the same. Oh, I've said that, I'm tired of repeating that part. But it's only if people would remember that, we could live, we've been able to live in peace, well, up to a certain, we have been, being selfish, we have been living in peace. But if you could understand and let everybody, nobody is better than you, or you know better than them. Have your differences, we fought for that, for our freedom, spiritual freedom of our ways. To be your king in your four walls. But by the end of the day, have your arguments, and by the end of the day, shake hands and part as friends. If only that was carried on, it wouldn't be all the trouble, you know.
How about your mother during this time? What had happened to her?
Well, then, as I say, I was unconscious and about it. And then decided to, my leg was black. And by that time, they had to, it was nearly out of time, more than half of the bunk. And my other one, we had to move that, so that it was more or less leaning out against the wall. A little stick, which looked like a little stick. And one of those horrible, cynical nurses came once. And she thought it was very alive. And I said, well, I need that. I said, I've got terrific pains. And I can't, I'm beginning not to be able to move my other leg. And she pulled this sheet, oh, wow, the sheet, which was there. See? Later in the giving me a sheet. And she says, haven't you seen your leg? And she pulled, well, and she lifted my hand up because I couldn't move my arms or nothing, you see, I was paralyzed then. And oh, God, I nearly died. I'm not joking, it was that size.
It's about 18 inches.
Yeah, like a black trunk. You couldn't see. Well, I could see my toes, but more or less, you could. I did cry. And she says, you know what's going to happen here? She says, we're going to cut it off. And quite honestly, I would have been so pleased. Because I said, well, by that time, I didn't know all that was experiments. The young Russian girls and Polish girls that had also, and that used to still come now and then, I suppose, for the for checkups or whatever it was, I don't know. But where they had experimented on, very similar to mine, but in bone transplant. But I didn't know that. And they were walking about, and they were all having their crutches, you know, the old fashioned crutch. And they seemed quite charming in there, no less. And I thought, you may as well cut this off. I wouldn't be in pain because pain was horrific. And I haven't told you that the bunks were in front of me, on the other end of there, they were occupied by black triangles, really, which were prostitutes. So the majority all of them had scenarios, this was very high contagious. One of them was an Italian girl. She had a red one, which meant, and she was a teacher, a lovely girl, in the mountain area in Italy. And she was, of course, in the resistance. Yeah. And when she was arrested, she was arrested by these German soldiers. And she knew which one. They all assaulted her. And when she was brought, and even when she was in the camp, because she told me afterwards, they were brought. They were brought to the camp, and she had to witness that. You see, they go through some. The mentality you don't understand, and she picked the one out. And of course, they were all put in prison because they all got it, and they didn't free her because she was, you know. But they got their punishment because of what it was, she was all unfortunate, that this one didn't agree with that, with that side of life. Right, now, I didn't know all that much, but you see, bandit from the time I was with those from the vein in the ballet, going back when I arrived. I did tell you that they took our clothes off and our shoes, you know. And then they gave you some things that didn't fit. But he took up that on the rear and on the rear, so did everybody else that came from other countries. We all had our normal clothes, stockings and our shoes, and a vest and a petticoat and a dress and a coat. And then all that's taken away, and they give you something that doesn't fit, a dress. And I had a green open woven thing that came right on my feet. No pants, no vest, no nothing. Nothing on the knee. Short sleeves. And they took my shoes off me. But somehow our bartender was one of these couples. With a ring that I couldn't get off from that I had from my confirmation, and my finger had swollen, so she cut it off, and she must have pocketed it because she had to take me into another little room to do that. You see, I don't know if that was just luck, but she didn't cut my hair, and she wanted my shoes that my father had made. Because my father was a master shoemaker and he made my shoes. And he used to make it from real leather, which was very rare during the war. And these were made with, which were a bit what you would call now jazzy, from a non-blown calf. And it's very fine hair. And it's sort of like a little tidy. Yeah. Brown and white, yeah. Beautiful leather. So he made me the shoe because that was something we hadn't seen. So, and she wanted those shoes. And I said, they're specially made for me. No, I have to give the shoes. I think she kept the shoes. In any case, she brought me a pair of sabots. A good pair, I must admit. Wood with imitation leather, with very thick wooden soles, like the miners used to wear here when I came back and I saw some of the miners in Staffordshire, and I thought, they wear the same type of well, you don't call them shoes, do you?
The clogs, would they be clogs? Yeah.
But laced up, you know, as it looks. Then, of course, I became ill. I was taken to the Riviera. I also had salvaged my comb. Well, one or two little things that I did grab in the end. And then when I recovered a little bit, my mind was recovering a bit in the Riviera, and then we're going back to make friends with this Italian girl. One of the nurses, the Belgian nurses and Belgian doctors, looked after me very well. They did what they could. One day he says to me, do you know who's got your spoon? You were given a wooden spoon. Well, I smacked it. I had a wooden spoon and a big, oh dear, what do you call it now? A soup bowl, which was a round thing. I thought the enamel had come off. You know, it was an enamel thing, something like that. said, oh, I don't know. I said, that was all left in that block, you see, because I was only there for 3 days. After all this violent reaction of what he must have injected, maybe. But how are you eating your soup now? Because there it was a sort of water milk, skimmed. Well, it had a colour of the yellow water, and I don't think it looked like milk, but it wasn't milk at all. It tasted very sour. But at least it was better than that soup. And I couldn't eat it, you see, because I hadn't got a spoon. And Lydia was feeding me. And of course, she was using her spoon all the time. And that's why I was getting better, the soup, so I thought, oh, where's your spoon? I'm having Lydia feeding me with her spoon. Because he had a word with Lydia, and then he told me that I must have no count, and I was getting better. Put anything to my mouth. I don't know if that was right, what Lydia was using. Poor girl. She sat for hours just going over my paper bandages like this. Hours in the night. Because when it was getting a bit better, the irritation of the itching was worse than the pain. And just going over those bandages like that. The only issue, what he did, you see, they cut it open. There are 5 holes on the top of my thigh, and very long one on the bottom. And then he used to, this was a German, he used to fill your leg. With gauze. I can remember that coming out of an enormous big glass gauze. You know, the more 1-inch gauze that they have coming out of this thing. And they used to push that with very sharp things. Oh, the pain was ripping. It was nothing, it was just pain. Because when those needles that used to push it in, used to touch everything inside. And then he used to leave it 4 or 5 days. And then he used to go back, he used to take you back to the theatre because I couldn't help. And then he used to go unconscious there because of the pain when they were dragging all this out. And they were dragging the pus out as well, which was in the way, it's not finished. Then they said they were going to cut it off. Right. Because everybody in that corridor was crying. And they were going to cut the leg off me. By then I had lost my hair. I haven't got any hair left. All my nice girls had gone. And my hope had gone. And I felt so low. I must admit, I must have sounded very cold, and that was the first time in a long time. And I used to say my prayers really, and Lydia used to sit next to me and listen to it. And she told me, she said, I don't believe what she's saying. She said he would have come out to the last of us, I believe the body's supreme. I never used to ask him my prayers for extra food or anything. I always used to ask for one thing, and that was to see my parents once more. And that was granted.